Joining me once again on Beyond the Playlist is Tommy Church. He's a guitar player, he's a songwriter, and I'm proud to count him as among my friends. So, Tommy, how you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. Doing wonderful.
I'm really excited to catch up because, you know, you've been doing all kinds of stuff during the pandemic because you stay busy, and I can't wait to ask you about it.
Well, where do you want to start? Do you want to start in the beginning way back in 1874, or do you want to come up the pre-pandemic?
Man, it feels like we've been locked down forever, doesn't it?
It's been crazy, you know, because a lot of my work, as we all know, you know, traveling has been my work forever, and that just got shut down completely. So it feels like ages.
So when the shutdown first happened, what did you do to kind of keep your sanity and keep things going? Did you spend a lot of time just writing and working on new stuff, or did you settle in and just watch a bunch of stuff on Netflix?
When the word of the pandemic had come out, you know, I'm a news radio geek. I'll admit it. You know, I drive down the road and listen to the news radio stuff, you know, and I'm a big fan of Clyde Lewis. Have you ever listened to Ground Zero by Clyde Lewis?
Clyde Lewis is from Salt Lake City. And I have an autographed copy.
Right. You know him.
I do know him. I know Clyde.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We talked about that before. Uh-huh. You see, here I am. I'm still a nut.
Yep.
But anyway, you know, he was talking about the pandemic, and we were actually getting ready to do an AKC tour. It was AKC and Comedy Christ. You know, and we were real excited for that tour, man. Everybody was looking forward to that tour, you know. I mean, number one, just getting out and touring again and, you know, getting the balls rolling. And then it just shut down, you know, because I was talking to Waylon, me and Waylon was talking, and I'm like, man, rumor going around that everything's going to shut down. And sure enough, you know, we all know what happened. No need to retort. You know, it's been hard enough on us all. But, you know, during the pandemic, man, I was living in Cleveland, and I was like, you know, this might be a good time to get back and, you know, to North Carolina, to my roots and stuff. So went back to North Carolina, and I actually picked up farming. You know, I was getting out on the farm and plowing the fields and planting taters and corn, you know, you know, getting back to the nature of just, like they say, getting back to my roots. 'Cause you know, I grew up on the farm and all that good stuff. And, you know, it was really good. It was really healthy connecting with nature again, you know, because at that point, as we all know, you know, the media's going crazy, everybody's gonna die every day, nothing but bad news, and you know, let's just hate the president, oh my god, just one bad story after another. So cutting all of that stuff off was like just a blessing in disguise.
Yeah,
you know,
I can imagine. It's kind of like a full reset.
It is, you know, and it's crazy because, you know, I never noticed, as most people don't, I assume most people don't, you know, it's crazy how much you kind of depend on, like, the social medias, you know, the Instagrams and the Facebooks and the Twitters and all that stuff and the YouTubes, you know. I mean, when I first got back to North Carolina, I found myself just sitting there for hours, just reading negative comments and getting caught up in all the stuff. You know, you just couldn't help yourself. It was almost addictive. You know, it was like a good cold Mountain Dew. You just couldn't say no.
I think almost everyone went through their period of doom scrolling, where they pick up the news app or Facebook or Twitter and just scroll to read the bad news. I mean, how bad could it get? Oh, it got that bad. How bad can it get? Oh, it got worse. How much worse can it get? Oh, it got really worse. And it was just on it for a while there last summer. I feel like we're living in the prequel to The Purge.
Yes, for real. You know, you hit the nail on the head. It definitely felt like that. So, you know, I did that in North Carolina for a while, man, you know, and then I was like, all right, dude, get rid of all this stuff. And, you know, I put down the Facebooks and all that stuff. And of course I go check it once in a while and, you know, make some music or whatever. But getting back to the hands-on in the farm, and, you know, I really started working with wood again and, you know, just doing that stuff with my hands and to keep your mind busy and to clear out all the negative energy and connecting with nature. And then, you know, felt really good. And then we went out with AKC and did like that little mini tour, you know, with Saliva and Ellison.
How'd that go? How was that experience in like pandemic height almost going around and trying to put on shows and dealing with all the restrictions and stuff. How was that? How was that experience?
It was eye-opening in a way because, you know, when you're just stuck in your spot in your hometown or just stuck in your house, you know, you can only rely on what the media tells you that is happening with people. You know, you can, that's only, I guess, news or input that you can have is like, oh, look, 20 people are dying in Colorado today and everybody, you know, is in the food lines in Texas. And we all know that's how the news went. That's not me, you know.
No, they took the things that were most sensational and made them the biggest deal. And that goes across the board. It goes from Fox to CNN to CNBC, whatever. That's the hardest part about 24-hour news is because when you're having to cater to advertisers and board members, you have to have an angle. That way advertisers come. And then you have to keep your advertisers happy. And then you have to keep people watching because you have advertisers. And it becomes less and less about the news and more about the pontification and the kind of wallowing in human tragedy and sadness that sometimes feels exaggerated beyond, like, even movie comprehension in some cases.
It made the movies look like just a faint bad dream, to be honest, you know, like the reality of it. It really did, especially, but that's what I was saying, you know, that was the only outlets you really had, you know, and yeah. I mean, you had the people on primetime TV telling you how the world ended and this and that. And then on the other side of it, it was how the world ended and this and that. But there was no like middle ground. And it felt like you couldn't find a decent amount of truth to save you, you know. Yeah. But going out there and doing that little tour, man, you know, because, I mean, we went from we played a couple shows in Florida, which were really good, by the way, you know, because Florida was still sun and fun, you know, you ain't telling me what to do, you know, Florida. So, you know, we was in Florida and Tennessee and, things are kind of weird in Tennessee. You know what I'm saying? Not that the people or the ones that actually came out to the show were weird, but it was just that vibe. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, from out of town. Oh, I don't know what you got. You know, you can just like see that in people's faces. Do you know what I mean? And then when we was out in Texas, you know, like, it was pretty relaxed, you know, but, the thing that really brought it was we played, Louisiana and, you know, Louisiana, they were hit pretty hard with all the stuff. And we were in Louisiana and we were playing an open parking lot outside, you know, plenty of social distance room or whatever anybody wanted to do. But the whole parking lot was lined with police cars. And I was like, okay, is this in case the crowd gets rowdy, or is this in case there's too many people, or what's the meaning behind this, you know? And walking into the stores and seeing how different people would react, because, you know, I mean, I saw firsthand quite a few people almost getting in fights over a mask, you know, and people getting into very big complications over, you know, wearing the mask or if the science is right. And I mean, the people not caring, just screaming at people. And it was kind of scary because in this day and age, you didn't know. It was like, okay, is something going to go down and am I going to have to be given an eyewitness statement or something, or am I going to get out of here in time?
You start looking at kind of shoes they're wearing, what color their pants are, what color their hair is, just in case you need to talk to a police officer later.
That was totally the vibe. And, you know, the people at the show that we met and knew who we are, of course, you know, everybody was cool. And you know, just human nature by itself, everybody gets tired of being locked up and shoved into a corner, so to speak, you know. Yeah. I mean, if you're just stuck in your house, man, it drives you stir crazy. And so it was pretty exciting and pretty brave as well. You know, it was like, I remember flying through the airport and, you know, it just seemed like every eye was on you. They're just eyeing you like in that sense of wonder.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't know if I could have done it.
Well, you know, I just took me, myself personally, and the rest of the guys, you know, we got along great, had a good time, you know, went up, played the shows, and everybody at the shows was great, you know. did the whole mass social distancing thing or whatever, but I ain't gonna lie. If somebody wanted to shake my hand, I was shaking hands. I was like, how you doing, buddy? It's good to see you. You know, I feel like I haven't seen you guys in 20 years is what it felt like, especially being stuck on the mountain. You know, then that tour come up, and then that summer I went down to Florida. You know, me and Waylon, we wrote the new AKC album, and, you know, we flew out to Indiana and produced some songs with Sahaj Tickerton, and that was really exciting, man, you know, and just kept working, and it was like, that was the only thing that kept me sane, you know. It was like getting together with Jeff and writing some Nothing songs, and getting together with my good friend Ian and writing the My Beautiful Suicide songs, and just keeping my mind busy on music and focusing on the positive nature of things really helped get me through a lot of crazy stuff that's been happening in this world.
You know, I think you're one of the fortunate ones because you have a network of people that you could not just reach out to and talk to, but like hang out with and socialize and feel a level of normalcy that some people just couldn't do. I mean, I know plenty of people who haven't left their town, let alone like left the house very much, except for maybe a grocery store, in 12 months, 13 months now.
For me, I took everything with a grain of salt. You know, I mean, especially growing up in the deep mountains and on a farm, I'm sure I've battled some things that are just uncomprehensible and should have killed me quite a few times. So I take a lot of things with a grain of salt, you know, it's like, but in today's world, man, it was more of the media scaring me to death than it was of the real thing. You know, I didn't walk into Walmart and see people dying. I didn't go to the gas station and watch an old lady fall on their face. You know, I mean, stay safe or whatever, but, you know, just took everything with a grain of salt. You know, I stayed safe, did my part, but can't let all that stuff just drive you crazy and kill you. You know, it was like when the tour came up, I was like, hey, I'm ready to do any tour. Are we going to be allowed to do it? That was the worst part. And that's the worst part about all of this stuff, man. It's like, oh, well, you're allowed to go to the bar until 10 o'clock. It's not like, you know, it's not like, hey, man, if, and you know how this goes. I mean, come on, look at the lives that rock and rollers live, you know? Because, I mean, we're in the dirtiest of places. We're always around people. Sometimes you don't shower for weeks. You eat like crap. You live like crap.
You're in close quarters when you're traveling with people. You're like in their pockets for weeks on end.
Oh, constantly. You know, you're always meeting new people, shaking new hands, giving hugs. Do you know what I'm saying? So I just looked at it and be like, well, you know, if the 2000s didn't kill me, then I guess I pretty much can make it through about anything, you know?
That my mind's, I've seen everything.
So tell me about some of the new stuff, some of the new music you've been working on. It sounds like you've been cranking out some new stuff.
Oh, man. That's so hard to even start. Well, you know, like I said, you know, we got a new AKC album on the way.
The singles that are already out are really good. I am really looking forward to the whole thing. But I have to tell you, I'm really enjoying what I'm hearing so far.
Oh, well, thank you so much. You know, that's a fun part. Well, especially during with all the crap that's going on, there was a lot of pent up aggression, and you know that comes through in a lot of stuff. You know, especially I guess you would call it an old school musician that actually still plays my instruments. You know, I don't rely on a computer, but it's like a lot of that aggression comes through. You know, and thank goodness for that, because it's almost therapeutic. And I know it's the same old story that musicians have said ever since the beginning of time, but it's so true. You know, you can't put a price on that kind of, I don't know. It's like that rock and roll yoga, you know, when you just make the music. So, you know, it's like the new AKC album. I'm really excited for people to hear, because it's really good. And it's a different approach and a different outlook on things. You know, it sounds pretty different, and I'm really happy with the way it turned out, and I can't wait for people to hear it. And you know, like right now I'm up here in Cleveland working on some new Jeffrey Nothing songs. You know, I mean, I write like a madman anyway, because it's a burden that I have. It's an addiction. You know, it's like, oh, I just wake up and hear a melody in my head and you know, just love to write music. That's what it comes down to. But you know, working on these new songs and like working on this new Jeffrey Nothing. And then I did a project, you know, with the singer from Nothing as well. His name is Ian Snyznik. We started this little thing that he had in his head for a while. It was called My Beautiful Suicide. And it's very industrial 90s rock, kind of Manson-y, Nine Inch Nails, which is really fun to get into. You know, it's like nostalgic and just, I know this sound. I love this sound, you know.
It's got to be fun, because all three of these, I mean, I know what Jeffrey typically sounds like. I know what this industrial sound sounds like. I know what AKC sounds like. So you're getting to play these different styles and getting to stretch different creative muscles, which has to be kind of fun for you as a writer.
Oh, it's absolutely fun, you know. And I mean, you know, I thank God, because I've been blessed to be around this talent, you know. It was like back in the days of playing with Mushroom Head, you know, it's like people would always come into the studio and it's like, hey, I'll write you something. I don't care. Let's write some songs, you know, whether it would go. And, you know, like some of my good friends that are just, you know, hardcore rappers or R&B singers, and working with the different people, it's always fun to branch out. But, you know, it's like I always give my credit going back to the mountains, man. You know, it's like the old bluegrass and the Opry. And because, you know, I grew up in a place where they have it's called the Merle Watson Festival. Well, that's my hometown. That's where I live. Every year, well, not 2020, any four-letter word right there, 2020. But it's like the best musicians in the world come to this festival. And, you know, it's like it's crazy, because you could walk into a pawn shop on a Friday morning and they would be having, you know, Bella fucking the Flecktones just sitting down and jamming out and playing all the instruments. So, you know, I go in and watch these world-class players. And, yeah, you know, I mean, people that can really, really play their instrument, and I mean very well. Getting down and growing up and seeing people around that, and, you know how most people, they get into that thing and it's like, oh, if it ain't heavy metal, it ain't shit. You know what I'm saying? You know,
yeah.
Oh, I don't listen to that stuff. So, you know, for me, I was just like, hey, that's crazy. Well, I'll tell you what, man, I was walking around a flea market one day and I sit down and I watched this old fella play Metallica, Ride the Lightning, the album, not the song, the album, on a banjo with solos and all.
I can imagine.
And I was like, that is more than impressive. So, and you know, I was a little kid when I saw that. So, you know, growing up around that really opened my eyes to a lot of stuff. And plus, the beautiful vocal harmonies and melodies that they put over it while they're shredding, it's like Dave Mustaine that could actually sing. You know, it's like if Dave Mustaine was You know, if they could sing like Freddie Mercury, that guy'd be just, unbelievable. I love Dave Mustaine, though. He's one of the most influential guitar players ever. Oh, gosh.
His ability to turn a riff, and not just any riff, a riff that stays classic forever, is kind of crazy, because on another show I do, we did Megadeth just a little bit ago, and Peace Sells, that whole album, still holds up. There's nothing on that album that isn't good.
I agree with you. And, even the one after that, Rust in Peace.
Oh, Rust in Peace Rust in Peace might even be better. But I was just talking about how age has not affected Peace Sells at all.
Yeah, it still is good today.
Even some of the stuff on Killing Is My Business is good. And that's rough. But even some of those riffs are still classic riffs.
Well, it seems like it's got almost like that hardcore punk edge to it. You know, for people like me, punk is more of an emotion. It's not really like a style of music. You know what I'm saying? Yep. It's more, and that's definitely what Peace Sells reminds me of, man. That's all. Dave Mustaine is amazing.
But yeah, that whole idea of sometimes things can get too polished. And you lose the edge that people liked about your music in the first place.
Well, I think that's a problem. I mean, I don't want to sound like that old man, but it's like, that's a problem for me with music in today. Like, I'll put on Spotify and everything is so produced and sounds so fantastic that it's like nothing has any style or attitude or personality anymore. Yeah. And I'm not saying everybody, I'm not putting everybody into a box, because there's a lot of bands that I love. I think that goes back to my idea of saying personality. It's like a White Zombie that had personality. Mm-hmm. It was like I could hear the personality of the whole band, not just of Rob Zombie, the singer, the movie maker, but the personality of the whole band.
Yeah.
And, and I really like the Dracula.
And even the engineer and the producer, you could hear some of their personality in there as well.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But it was like they let the band play, mm-hmm. It's not like now where everything is. And, this is the thing that people, especially in the music world, talk about all the time, where everything's on the grid, everything is perfect, everything is just looped. You only have to play with something one time and just loop it and it's done, and that's something that every studio musician has had to get accompanied with. But, I think that's some of the music out today is almost too perfect to me. Does that mean I'm old? Maybe so, but... I still like those old punk rock records where the guitar tone wasn't perfect, but dang, it sounds good.
As you work with each of these different people, working with Jeff and working with Waylon, they're different kind of creative minds probably. So how do you figure out how to mesh with what they want with what you're willing to, or what you're able to give them back?
Well, it's like a, let's just take this one by one. Just like working with Jeff. Working with Jeff, it's amazing. He's a fun guy and he's got a great personality and we laugh a lot. I mean, I'm just a nut. I'll just say it outright. I'm a little bit off my rocker, but it's like, with Jeff, I look at him as like, we had this discussion the other day. I'm like, Jeff, you are a singer. That's been your job for whatever, you love to sing, but I was like, I don't see you as a singer. I see you as an artist. I see your voice as an instrument, not as, something I want to hear on a Christmas song. I'm like, and that's how I,
a version of Silent Night sung straight by Jeff could be haunting and very interesting.
Well, the artistic version, yes. That's exactly what I mean by that. it's his personality. It's his creepiness. It's his, it's his love of horror and the strange and the very unique that gives it that personality. So, it's like when we sit down to write with Jeff, I'll give him a piece of music and he'll be like, and it'll just take on a new life. And then we make the music around the melodies or whatever comes out of it. Do you know what I'm saying? It's an ever changing piece of work, you know, and that's a great thing, you know, and it's very inspiring, especially as a writer, you know, because you sit down and you're like, okay, well, I got this cool piece of music. And then you hear something in the vocal or you hear something in the melody line that Jeff wanted to do. And it's like, okay, well, let's rewrite everything and let's just start from the beginning, you know? And that's the term where it means, like, you know, coming in as an artist, because it brings more artistic and creativeness to it than just being a singer.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
You know what I mean?
Because
in today's world, you know how it is. You know, it's like, oh, well, I'm going to hire a singer to sing my song. All right. They come in and they sing it exactly the way you want it. They hit everything perfect. They hit every note. And it's like, okay, cool, done. Great. Good job. But then you have that artist that comes in and they sing it their way. And then it's like, oh, okay, now hold on, wait. We got to do something special for you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I really enjoy that. Put the brakes on. This just took a whole different direction type of approach, you know, especially from the artist. That's amazing to me.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, writing with Waylon, you know, he sings very pretty sometimes, you know, he can be very just brutal, you know, just, oh, I'm going to bite your head off, you know, and then he'll turn it around and then he sings to you like an angel. And it is that lullaby that's going to sing you to sleep. You know what I mean?
That's the one thing I've always found so impressive about his voice is it's got not just a range as in the notes he can hit, but a range as in the moods and the colors he can hit, because he can do those soft, you know, harmonic things that make people, you know, shimmy. And then he's got all the way up to the stuff that makes your head explode. And it's glorious that he knows how to use all of that in his vocal. He makes the right choices when he's doing singing for that. I mean, it's not like he's forcing anything. It's just the right choice.
That influences me a lot. You know, it was like, man, when I would sit down and I'd write songs with Jason Popson, you know, J-Man. Like, you know, he always had like this really unique approach himself, you know, and like the way that he would do his words and the way that he would just, you know, he would start his little rhymes and get into the groove, and you know what I'm saying? And then, you know, he was really good at writing hooks, and it all just influenced me, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so, he actually has a really interesting internal rhythm for the way he delivers lyrics, because it's not anything that I have heard before or since, but it's super catchy. And once you hear it, you know it's him.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, you know, getting to spend a lot of time and, you know, I mean, shucks, man, you know, we'd be on tour and we'd sit down and find an old dingy place somewhere and we'd just make up songs and just have a good time. And that, you know, listening to him do what he did always inspires me rhythmically, musically. Well, you know, I just look at the world like it's an open canvas, and it's a glorious thing, man. And I thank God that I've been able to experience that, you know, with a lot of different people.
So tell me a little bit about how you guys are handling promotion for the tour and the whole new album thing, because it seems like you guys are really using social media as a major tool to get the word out that you guys are on the move.
Well, that's about all we have to use right now. You know, we're going through, you know, a couple of different outlets. You know, it's like a really going through the AKC and Wake Up Music Rocks global thing quite a bit. You know, but right through social media, that's about all we got. Manager's name, Jeremy Jerome. He got picked up last year, and he's got some really good connections, and he's been really doing some good stuff.
As you guys are prepping for the tour, what kind of precautions do you have to worry about? Different states' rules, or does it all kind of be the same? Or are you hoping that things just kind of open up and it's kind of almost normal?
Well, on this run, you know, we're definitely going to obey any state's rules, you know, like social distancing and, of course, wearing a mask. I'm not wearing two masks, but I will wear a mask just for the safety of other people. most of the states that we're going to.
It's not like two of you guys aren't used to wearing masks all the time anyway.
Absolutely. You know, it's like y'all want to fuss about masks, try wearing that 5-pound latex condom on your head every night for 2 hours while jumping around. That's what that thing felt like. That thing was crazy. But I loved it, though. You know, I wouldn't trade it for the world. It's like, I definitely respect all the guidelines of each state, respect the safety of others, and respect others. But most of the states we're going to on this run, they're primarily open. You know, like Texas is pretty much 100%. You know, up here in Ohio, where I'm at right now, you know, they're letting people back into the ball games and the bars, and things are opening up slowly, not at 100% capacity, but easily a good 50%. And hopefully by May, yeah, we head out on tour in May. So hopefully everything will be opened up by that time to an extent to where, you know, the crowds can come out and enjoy the show. Because I know a lot of people want to get out and go hear some live music. I know I do.
Part of me takes personal offense that you guys aren't making it this far out west. But I understand why. So I was mad for a short time. It wasn't permanent. But you guys got to make a plan to get out here west sometime soon.
Well, you're living in a dangerous area up there, man. You know, this stuff is getting crazy up on your end of the country. You know, I mean.
So when's the new stuff with Jeff coming out?
Well, most of the time we give like a 6-week turnaround. Do you know what I'm saying? You know, I've still got to, I guess, work the magic on them, so to speak, you know, but get them into my studio and really piece them together and put them together. But, you know, we usually give like a 6-week turnaround time. So that way we can get everything together, the artwork, video, blah, 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 all that stuff. And so we should have a new song within the next couple of weeks. So we're working on basically, well, we have a ton of songs, but we're working on a new, it's probably going to be anywhere from, I'd say probably from 6 to 8 song EP right now.
Cool. Because I got to tell you, the last couple of things he did, the Doom Candy stuff, and I really liked that. I liked it a lot. It was a different direction for him, but it was a very good direction.
Oh, I love the Doom Candy stuff, man. That was the good stuff. You know, it was just something. It was just fun. It was sporadic, and like you say, it was a different direction, and we both enjoyed it a lot, and we still have more of those songs to be released. We still probably have about five to six more of those Doom Candy-esque songs to release, you know, and they're very, very electronic driven, very, I don't know, what would you call it? Industrial-esque, I guess.
No, I love the fact that, you know, when Jeffrey decides to take different directions, it's always interesting because it's always Jeff, but it's always a different direction. And I think that being separated from Mushroomhead has given him the chance to do all the things that he hasn't had an opportunity to do yet or wanted to do. It's been really interesting listening to everything come out and the differences.
Well, you know, it's the same thing, you know, it was like with Waylon and Jeff, you know, it's like I was telling you about the whole artist thing, man. It sometimes it just takes that direction, you know, and of course it you know, like it's still Jeff. Yeah. But it's a different side, a different version. And, you know, that's really exciting because, you know, like I was telling you earlier, man, sometimes it just takes on a whole new life of its own. And it's like, okay, let's just start from the ground up again right here. Here we go.
Oh my goddamn way.
I was touring with the Autumn Offering at that time, and we were touring in a van. Well, anyway, I had like this little six-string ukulele that I'd just play in the van, and we'd pass it around and play Van Halen songs and have fun. Well, anyway, we had been drinking with Mushroom Head for days. So I got up, and I was still drunk, and I had my little ukulele, so I went wedding crashing. So, I mean, man, we were in California. We went to this. We were playing this place. Well, there was a wedding next door, and I went to the wedding next door and was singing Misfits Danzig songs to this dude at a wedding that I didn't even know. So, all right. So then I walk across the street and I start singing Reno. I'm playing the riff and I'm singing the song. And I'm like, cause I'm drinking fucking Friday. And Skinny heard it and he was like, we got to record that. And I was like, yes, we do. Because I'm drinking fucking fucking just kept on. And that's how Reno came about, man. I wrote that song on a ukulele in fucking back of a van.
Oh,
wedding crashing.
So I have a question. The one song where you guys do the LaGrange homage, was that planned or was that like a vocal improv by Waylon?
Actually, man, I'd come up and we were just rocking out one day and Jimmy LaMarca, the bass player from used to play in Chimera, we were all setting up and we were just having fun. And, you know, we was all just playing through some songs and whatever. And I just kicked into LaGrange one day and I was just like, oh, just making fun of it, you know,
yeah.
Just how, how. And Skinny kicked in, and then Waylon kicked in, and Jimmy kicked in, and it just turned into a little LaGrange homage.
I love that bit, and it was really funny because the first time I heard it, I stopped it, and I rolled it back, and I'm like, hey, they're making LaGrange jokes. I like these guys.
Well, dude, that's just how, and it was one day we were on tour in Texas. We were on tour in Texas and, you know, we'd played around with it and it was like, and you know, we played it live before we even like even tracked it or whatever. That's what I was saying. Like, dude, we were on stage and I just kicked into it.
That's great.
And then Skinny kicked into it and it was live. We did it live before we even, cause we were in Texas. It was freezing. The fountains in Texas were frozen over and there was no heat in the whole building. So it was like 20 degrees in the building that we had to play in. And we were just in Texas and it kicked into LaGrange and everybody kicked in and it just happened.
That's
and it was
funny.
Like, wow. That literally just happened.
Well, I played in enough cover bands that there's a standard list of songs that every band knows. Roadhouse Blues, LaGrange, couple Blues Brothers tunes, Born Under a Bad Sign. There's probably 25 songs that every bar band, every cover band knows. And LaGrange happens to be one of them. It's like a common language. You're like, okay, let's do Roadhouse Blues. And everyone knows Roadhouse Blues. I want it. Well, take care. Be safe. Have fun. And I'll be in touch.
All right, brother. I'll talk to you soon.
For more Beyond the Playlist, you can go to jhammondc.com. You can follow me on Twitter at jhammondc. You can email the show, jhammondc@gmail.com. Or you can find the Facebook group, Beyond the Playlist with J. Hammond C. The theme music is by MFTJ, featuring Mike Keneally and Scott Shore. More recordings from MFTJ are available on Lazy Bones Records. See the link in the show notes for more fine releases from them. The cover art is by Phil Rue. If you like the show, you can support me at patreon.com/jhammondc. Thank you for listening to Beyond the Playlist.